This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you so much for joining us. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hello again. Today we are here with Mindy. Mindy, I'm really glad for the opportunity to talk to you. So welcome and thanks for coming onto the podcast.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
What I'd like to do to start out is just by asking you to kind of go on a little bit of a ramble. In other words, talk about what's on your mind, what's in your heart, what you want to explore today. Don't worry about having it make a lot of sense or all the dots connected. Just kind of get us rolling, and then I will ask you a number of questions to kind of refine our direction, and then I think together the two of us will land exactly where we need to land. Does that sound
okay? Okay, that sounds fine.
All right, great.
All right, ready?
Jump right in, yeah.
All right, I'm going to do a brief backstory just so I can give you some context. Just 2 years ago, my husband overdosed and had admitted that he had been a drug addict, an IV drug user for 5 years. He was the medical director of a big hospital, so it was a pretty big deal. And he lost his job. He went into rehab. He moved out for a year. And I felt like I was a bit in shock and was just tapped into a level of rage that I never quite knew existed in me, although, you know, every now and then I could get angry, but not anything to the point of which that what felt like to me a betrayal was. And at the time, my kids were two daughters. One was 4 and one was 7. I guess she was almost 5 because their ages matter in terms of when my husband admitted that he had been a drug addict. He said the day he began using was the day my youngest daughter was born. So I just couldn't wrap my brain around that. And even when I talk about it now, I could feel sort of the sadness and the outrage and the fury just kind of wells up in me. And it feels like it wasn't 2 years ago. It feels like it was yesterday. So about a year ago, he moved back in. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. He moved back in, with sort of my hope we could, really make it better than it ever was, because our marriage wasn't without its trials and tribulations. Mm-hmm. But I was really hoping that this would kind of give us like the opportunity to really kind of be vulnerable with each other and be honest with each other and be, I don't know, at a deeper level than we had ever been. That was a year ago. Yeah.
Okay. And I want you to keep going, but just to clarify this one piece, when he moved in and that was your hope, what were the processes or tools or plans that you had to try to make that happen, to try to make it so that this would be, you know, better than it has ever been before?
Well, we had committed to be in therapy together. We liked this one particular couples therapist, so we were going to see him. And he was also in going to 12-step, and he had to go to a report twice a week to a group, to like a doctor's diversion program, it's called. And you there? Sorry.
Yeah.
All these little beeps. And so he had to, he was doing his thing. We were sort of doing ours weekly, and then just my requirement of him was that he check in with me on a regular basis and say to me, how are you doing with all of this? Because I didn't want to clobber him with it, but I also wanted him to be aware that it was constantly on in my consciousness, and I didn't want anybody to pretend otherwise. I also didn't want to make him feel like, you know, he was sort of on trial all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. So keep going now.
Okay, so none of that worked.
Okay.
None of it worked. And I have to say, you know, he's done as good a job as he could possibly do, but it's not good enough for me. Can I add, I don't know if we have time for this, but I just want to kind of, there's a little more backstory if I can just fill that in.
Yeah, and let me just say, Mindy, we have all the time that we need, so don't be, you know, mindful of time. Just, you know, give yourself the opportunity to go where.
All right. And I'm just, you know, I don't want things to be extraneous, but this actually feels like it's kind of substantive for this. My mom died a few years ago, like 7 years ago now, of a drug overdose. My mom was a very serious drug addict, and during the years of her using drugs, my husband, who was a physician, was really helpful in getting my mom into rehab. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he was extremely, he just loathed my mother. Mm-hmm. But he helped me get her kind of the help she needed, or at least we had hoped that the help she needed. And he really watched me kind of go through this despair with my mother's drug addiction and then her ultimate death from a drug overdose.
Mm-hmm.
So the feelings I have are very kind of sordid, because I feel like not only he could have had an affair and I think I would have been fine, I would have been upset, I would have gotten over it, but I feel like this one just touched a chord that it doesn't stop resonating. You know, I keep every, you know, there's no end to my feelings of outrage. Mm-hmm. And you know, so it kind of keeps going. I keep going back to, how could he have done that? How could he have lied for all those years?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing the damage that it could do, that it was doing, and then the date of his using, you know, his initial date of sticking a needle in his arm was the actual date that I was giving birth to our second child, which to me is just, it kind of spins, it takes my life and spins it around and doesn't make any sense of it, because I was euphoric the day my daughter was born.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is sort of the background, but the truth is, you know, I'm angry at him for everything and nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just angry all the time. I'm finding out that I am a terribly unforgiving person, mm-hmm. which I think for people who know me would never guess that. But with my husband, I am completely unforgiving, and I'm really on the verge of just saying I can't do this anymore, not because of the drug addiction stuff, but because I can't stand who I am in the marriage anymore.
Mm-hmm. So when you said I'm on the verge of I can't do this anymore, what's this?
I can't continue to be married under these conditions. I can't. We're very separate. I keep it that way. I've made our lives very separate.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of any kind of intimacy, I don't feel like I could continue like this anymore. And the only alternative for me is to get a divorce, separate our lives. And truthfully, the idea of that is very painful, not because of my husband, but because of my kids, because I wind up having to have my kids part-time because of there'll be a custody arrangement, and I really don't want to have that. So whichever way I turn, I feel trapped. I feel trapped in the marriage because I'm so miserable with the way I am in the marriage. Mm-hmm. And then I feel trapped if I leave the marriage because I lose my kids. Mm-hmm. And all of it, and wherever I turn, I keep facing this mirror of me, which is the worst part of me, which is the part of me that I think, I left home when I was really young, and I think it was the part of me that I wanted to run from in the very beginning, and now I'm like, you know, all, like, wherever you go, there you are, because here, you know, it's the worst of me.
What do you describe what you call the worst of you?
Very moody, angry, unforgiving, cut off, unemotional, except for the anger part. No curiosity, no joie de vie, no enthusiasm, no love, no feelings of tenderness. You know, except when I'm around my husband. But when I'm not, I have all of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you left home because you couldn't have those positive aspects of yourself that you just listed, and you just needed some space to have them, to find them, or to reconnect with them in yourself. And who you were at home was all that other stuff that you didn't like that much. And so now, if I'm hearing you right, the situation that's been created is one in which it's not just that you're trapped circumstantially, as you described, but also you're trapped having to experience yourself and that part of yourself that was always, you know, the hardest, the most challenging, the part you wanted least.
Yeah, and the truth is I never really looked at it because I ran when I was so young, and I did a lot of things at a really early age. So I don't think I really ever, you know, I've always been able to kind of create my own reality and make it really, really good, and surround myself with people who kind of mirror back the thing that I want anyway. And now, like, everywhere I go, you know, at some juncture in the day, I run into my husband and I'm back in that state.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So tell me if you can, like, in a one or two paragraph a summary of the kind of personal healing work that you did around your childhood issues, you know, long before you met your current husband. What was that path for you?
In a paragraph or two?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can almost do it like bullet points if you want.
Okay, well, I don't know how I'm gonna just be circuitous about this because I can't think of the first thing that
That's
comes
okay.
to my mind is my when I was 26 I married my first husband. I was married for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And right before we got married he went from being a very normal, regular guy to being an Orthodox Jew. Mm-hmm. And so we lived a really, really, really religious life for 8 years. I mean, more religious than most Orthodox rabbis. Mm-hmm. And there was, as much as I didn't like the rigidity and the patrimony of it all, I really got a lot of the spiritual piece of it. And I got closer, I think, to a feeling of God than I've ever had, even though the marriage didn't work and the Orthodox experience was not good. Mm-hmm. So that kind of opened me up to something that I never would have been exposed to. So there's a piece of me around Judaism and God that feels really healing. Mm-hmm. And having my children is just an amazing experience for me. I never thought I would have kids. I had them very late. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a really conscious mother, and mothering for me is very, in some ways, very healing and very spiritual. And really, really challenging. and I do a lot of yoga, and and I feel like I have great friends, and I talk a lot, and I'm a healer in my work, mm-hmm. and on a daily basis, I feel like I'm being healed by the people around me who I work with.
Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
Well, I just wanted to know, what about actual types of, healing work that you did, for yourself?
Well, I've been in a lot of therapy. I haven't been in therapy for a while, but I'm trained as a psychoanalyst. Mm-hmm. So in order just to be a psychoanalyst, I had to go through my own analysis. I've had probably altogether about 10 years worth of psychotherapy, psychoanalysis in there. So I've done a lot of work.
So let me, I want to ask you something about that. And I know this is a big topic, so, just share as much as you feel is appropriate. Mm-hmm. But through the modalities that you spent your time with, analysis and whatever else came along with that, mm-hmm. how did you reconnect with, process, heal the legacy that lived within you from that childhood experience, from being the child of a drug addict, and I'm sure all the other aspects of that childhood that, I don't even know, and I'm sure there's so many of them that were challenging, but in other words, not so much, how does a particular discipline describe what it does and what you're supposed to be doing when you're going through the process, but for you personally, how did you experience that, and did you feel that it was successful for you in healing those, wounded places?
Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever asked me that question before, and I think it's an incredible question. I don't think anyone has ever really healed it. I think that there have been important people who have been therapists in my life who I think kind of I felt they contained my wounds or my sadness, and I think that just knowing that they listened and cared was very healing. But mm-hmm. I think specifically the old stuff that kind of got me here has really never been fully attended to. I don't know if I could ever really purge it, and I don't think I've ever really healed it.
Mm-hmm. So, you just said that you don't know if you ever could really purge it, and you don't know if you've ever really healed it. But let's take purging off the table, okay? In other words, let's say that it's always going to be a part of you, but it's more a question of, how it lives in you.
Yeah.
And at this point, with everything that you know, the long path you've been on, how do you understand what that would look like, what healing would look like, and what would be, how would you do that?
Well, I feel a little apathetic or a little hopeless around that, I gotta say, because I think my wish is that my suffering, as it were, was fully understood and embraced, and that I'm sort of just loved for all of my complexities and miseries and loveliness, I don't really believe that's possible. I think in my heart of heart, I don't really believe that I can ever really have that.
How about you having that relationship with you? Is that possible, do you think?
Well, yeah, I do, but I think my anger that prevents me from doing that, and my disappointments mm-hmm. prevent me from getting there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to come back to that in a moment, because I actually believe the opposite. I think that this is all exactly now the opportunity for that very thing to happen, and in some way maybe it wouldn't be able to happen as fully without this opportunity, as awful as it has been for you. So So let's bracket that. But before we come back to it, I want to go back to something that you said before. About a year ago, your husband moved back in, and you described all of the different things that were in place to try to help you, you know, repair and even, you know, recreate something between the two of you. And you said none of those things have worked. So, and you also said that, you know, your husband has done, you know, the best that he could, but candidly, you know, that wasn't enough for you. So I just wanted to hear a little bit more about what it means to not have worked.
You mean in the current state that I'm in?
In
the last year, are you talking about?
I just want to hear something. You hoped that something would happen through that process of reunion, but conscious reunion with lots of support and methods for getting through the bad stuff to really understand and then build something better. And that was your hope. And you, you know, just told me frankly that that hasn't materialized. So, you know, so I want to know kind of what kept that from happening.
Well, the wish was that we would have this deeper connection and that through this pain, our both of, I mean, he has his own pain and I have mine, and that we could just kind of understand each other and grow more deep, more deeply. And instead, we keep running up against sort of the everyday, I don't know, detachment, reality. Like, we're not in a deep place. We're not in a connected place. We can't seem to stay there for more than a minute at a time. And the only time I feel like we ever would get there was in the depth of despair and a therapy session, and then we would leave and it would just dissipate. So the ability to hold on to something which that felt more real without the everyday, not even the monotony. It's not the monotony that's not making it work. It's, I keep being aware of how much I feel disappointed by him,
mm-hmm.
not just from what his overdose, but with from how he disappoints me as a human being, like every day. Mm-hmm. So rather than my seeing who he is and what he's capable of, it's like I'm living in the presence of the absence every day with him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And so if you were stepping outside of your own circumstance for a moment and just looking at him, in terms of you, how would you say, you know, his own healing path is going?
Well, that's part of the problem, too. I don't know. I know he goes to a lot of, you know, AA meetings, and he goes to all his groups and his therapy, and we don't communicate there. I think he doesn't, you know, I haven't made him feel safe to communicate with me because I'm such an angry bitch lately that I'm sort of the last person he really wants to confide in. Mm-hmm. And then it's a catch-22 because I'm not giving him the safety to do it, and then he's not doing it. So the very thing I want, I'm making sure that it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of want him to go beyond feeling unsafe and do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And
if I were him, I wouldn't do it either.
Right. Currently, you're still in therapy together, or no?
No. That's part of the hopelessness of it for me. About 4 months ago, we stopped.
Because...
Maybe 5 months ago. Well, I mean, technically because we both had some problems with this therapist and his boundaries, but realistically I think we were both feeling like we were at an impasse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what can you say, you know, before we come back to you, just about your husband, if he were, you know, here on the phone right now and he was going to talk to me for 5 minutes and tell me how it was that he went from being a knight in shining armor in relation to your mom and her addiction to someone who, you know, began using and betraying you in all of the ways that he did, as well as his family. You know, how would he describe that?
That's a good question, too. I think he would probably say that he was lying to himself. and that it was so important for him to play the role of a hero in, you know, in my mother's life and through my eyes, and kind of delude himself with that role of a hero, that he couldn't be honest with himself or anyone else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, his refrain has been that, you know, he kept thinking every day he would stop, and, you know, every day didn't. And I think I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but he lost his job, and sort of that financial house of cards came crashing down too. So, mm-hmm. So the hero is definitely no longer the hero, you know,
right.
In many ways.
And so he clearly couldn't maintain the role that he had chosen for himself, you know, as a husband, as a caregiver, as a as a father. He was in over his head, and this was, you know, all he knew how to do to try to hold it together. I get that, so that's a good piece of it. And then if he, you know, were asked to explain what he knows or understands about, you know, what was wounded in him that made it so that he couldn't, you know, be the hero, or that he needed to be the hero to, you know, compensate for some completely opposite kind of feeling inside of himself. Does he have an awareness of that? Has he gone through that process of introspection?
I imagine so. He's been in a lot of intensive therapy, so I really imagine that he has touched that, but again, he hasn't shared that with me.
So, okay, so this is a place, before we get back to what I bracketed before, this needs a little bit of space and time for us, because, you know, I get that, you know, you've become very angry and that you're not necessarily a safe place, but it seems like one of the most important things that somebody can do, you know, who messes up in that way, as an offering, is to be able to come to the person, you know, who they have hurt through their dishonesty and their betrayal, and say, you know, I'm not asking you to forgive. That's up to you. I'm not asking you, you know, to make this okay. But I do feel that it's really important for me to share with you, you know, from the work I've done, what I understand about how I got to be that person. And, you know, if you're willing, I really want to share that with you. Now, what you're telling me is that that moment has never occurred. Is that true?
No, it hasn't ever occurred.
And
he's apologized profusely and, you know, done that work of it, but he has never really given me an understanding of it.
And has that question ever come up either between the two of you or in you know, couples counseling?
I don't really think it has. I think he has a pretty kind of rote answer that, you know, I think he, I don't know if it's emotional or not for him. It doesn't ever feel like it really is, but the times that we haven't been going over this now for a while, but in the first 6 months when we were back in therapy, he would talk about it, you know, just in terms of his loneliness in our marriage and how I get that. I think, like I said, we had issues in our marriage, and he felt that after we had our first child, I was paying more attention to our daughter, and he feels guilty about those feelings. And then then my second pregnancy was really, really difficult. So I had, you know, a 2-year-old, and I was really out of it in terms of taking care of anybody but our oldest child and dealing with being pregnant and working. So I think he felt very isolated, and he talks about, you know, like he was like, you know, the lowest on the totem pole, you know, the kid, the dog, the, you know, and then there was him. And he's right. I mean, he was definitely right about that. I was definitely preoccupied. Mm-hmm. And then after our second daughter was born, you know, his thing is that he was second, that I was paying closer attention to the kids, but at that point, I mean, he started using the day the number two was born. So this is where there's a part of me that doesn't buy the whole story. Because, I guess I just, what I don't understand in all of this for him is he had multiple opportunities to get help. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if he couldn't tell me, he could have told someone. And he opted not to do that. And so, you know, whatever his reasoning is, at a certain point, and, you know, I actually don't subscribe to the disease theory, and it really, really, really bothers me because it feels like it's just an excuse. Because I think at a certain point, everyone has a choice to get help, and he never exercised his choice. Wow. And so, whatever his reasoning is, and his sadness, at the way he's explained it to me, doesn't feel like it's. It doesn't get me, you know. It doesn't motivate me toward empathy.
Right. So here's, you know, my perspective on that. First of all, the best definition of addiction that I know has nothing to do with disease. It goes like this: okay. Addiction is a continuous decision not to be present.
I could not agree more. Yeah.
So that's the first part that in using when he began, it was basically a decision to check out. You know, this is too much for me. I can't take this. But not only are there lots of opportunities to seek help or to, you know, share more fully what's going on, but to make that choice and to risk so much in making that choice in dealing with what was too much at the time, it always indicates that there's a wound in the core of one's being that far predates, you know, almost always, I should say, you know, that far predates the current cause for concern. So I get the loneliness, you know, in the marriage. I get the fact that there were issues and that both of you were, you know, imperfectly, but to the best of your ability, you know, being together. But when I was asking you that question before about how did I get here, you know, and had that question come up and had that been offered to you as a gift, you know, in all of this, what I was really wondering is really beyond that time and even just the time before, you know, you had your kids, I wanted to know, had he gone on the healing journey to share with you, look, it's not about getting off the hook, but here's how I see that the wounding took place in my life. Here's, you know, how I grew up around it. And here's kind of what, you know, created a perfect storm in me to, you know, become this addict at the worst possible time. And it sounds like what you're saying is that really hasn't happened.
No, I mean, it's so interesting when you say that, because I think that a few months after he was in rehab, he was in rehab for 3 months, I guess. So right around toward the tail end of it, when I wasn't as furious, I think there was this part of me that was then thinking, I wonder, because he was so vulnerable during that time, and I was thinking, I wonder if this is the depth. Like, I know, in me, I know, I understand, I may not have healed it, but I definitely understand the wounds. And I don't feel like he's ever really gotten there or gone there. And maybe, you know, as you say that, I'm thinking maybe that was the wish I had, was that we were going to heal that in each other and really get connected. And so when he moved back in October, we didn't ever get close to it, but I think I still had the longing for that and the desire that that's exactly what would occur, but I never really had the words for it, and it hasn't ever happened.
So, you know, this is the part that has to do with what's between the two of you that I wanted to address before we come back to just you. And I would say it like this. You know, there's whenever somebody, you know, betrays you in such a big way, and those that are closest to you, there is this, you know, fundamental howl of, you know, how could you do this? Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, it's not something that could ever be answered sufficiently. So it's more of an existential, you know, howl of pain than it is an actual question. And yet at the same time, the only way that the breach can begin to be healed between two people is for that question to really seriously be engaged, you know, to the best of everyone's ability. So here's what I get, you know, from everything that you've been sharing with me, is that there is no intimacy between the two of you, you know, nearing anywhere close to what would be, you know, healing and soothing for you, because the one thing that would actually be the bridge to that intimacy hasn't occurred.
Right. If that's the one thing, then that definitely hasn't occurred.
Right, and in my experience, that is the one thing, is that, you know, it's not about blame, and it's not about, you know, one person being good and the other person being bad. It's about both people owning everything they can about how they got there, and in the process, really opening themselves up in that sharing and seeing each other as fully as they can, you know, both in the light and the dark, and therefore restoring a sense of connection, even if the connection begins from a mutual acceptance of one another's brokenness.
Yeah. But, you know, here's my concern, and I think that peace is so important for he and I, and yet my fear is that we would go there, and then I would have this moment of really having a lot of empathy and tenderness, but then I wouldn't be able to sustain it because I'd still be too angry. My fear is that I won't ever, like, even touching that won't heal it for me.
Okay.
Like,
so
I will continue to make him, you know, the enemy.
So that's a what if about the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't exist, right?
So, well, right.
You haven't gotten to that place. You don't really have any idea about what would happen if, you know, he bared himself to you in that real kind of vulnerable way. And I get what you're saying is, that would be good. And you know, what if I can't even? What if that's not even okay with me? What if that and nothing? What if nothing, even that, is enough to stem, you know, this rage that I feel? So I want to get to that in a moment, but I just wanted to, you know, make it really clear that that's something that you can't know.
Right.
It's not here in the present. It's only a projection into the future. And it could also really prevent you from being present for what's possible.
Right.
So I just wanted you to recognize, okay, I have a fear,
yeah.
I have a concern. And I don't want you to push it away. I don't want you to judge it or to think that somehow you shouldn't have it. But I just wanted you to recognize that that's about the future. That's not about the now.
Okay. All right. I could stay with this.
All right. So the next thing I want to say to you about this is that, you know, I want what's best for you and your family. And I don't claim to know what that is. And, you know, I know, what I do know is this, is that it never has to look a particular way. So it could be possible that you and your husband, you know, did all the healing work that you possibly could, and that led you to realize that, you know, the wounds are too deep, too much water under the bridge, and you do need to get a divorce. And while that's not, you know, what, you know, anybody would have wanted at a certain point, you know, that may ultimately end up being the best thing.
Right.
And so I just really needed to say that because I don't think it needs to look a particular way. And
and
also I want to say that that in that regard, so often people are desperate to avoid a particular option, especially especially because of what they think about their kids and what it's going to do to their kids. Mm-hmm. And we can never really know that either, because often what we teach our kids by making the hard choices about our own well-being is more important than anything that they would have experienced if we gritted it out.
Yeah.
And that's not was not an advertisement for separation or divorce.
I don't know
which is the right path, but what I'm saying is that right now the only thing that can really be your barometer going forward is, you know, where is the wholeness? What is calling me when I'm in a state of openness and connection and presence?
Yeah.
And just continuing to pay attention to that. And really what I'm saying in drawing, you know, our attention to that missing piece between you and your husband is that I don't believe that you're in a position to know the answer to that question or to feel that there's even been enough of that, you know, quiet, peaceful ground within yourself and certainly between you to be able to have that information.
I agree with you. I actually really agree with you. And I think I've been on the fence for a while about what to do, and very sort of that my ambivalence has been driving me crazy, partially because I don't feel like there's enough to go on, you know, like
right. There's
just my anger that I want to get away from. But I agree. I think if I had all of the pieces, not of the puzzle per se, but of the depth of all of this for both of us, then I think I could at least I could make some decisions from a stronger place. Yeah.
Okay, great. So one of the things I would say is that, you know, when you're ready, it might be important to revisit counseling and getting a new counselor or a different kind of arrangement, you know, whether it's an intensive situation or one that's ongoing. But just to make the invitation to dive in again with your husband and to really look for and encourage him to go to those places with you that you know that even after all of this, you know, he's never gone. And also to let him know, and this is where we're going to next, to let him know that it's your intention, even though you're having such a difficult time, to do your work in making it, you know, as easy as it can be for him to do that with you. In other words, you don't want to be invested in continuing to punish him, and you know that some of your reactions can have that result, but that's not your intention, and you want to take responsibility for the piece that you can to try to give both of you the opportunity to go to those vulnerable places together for more than, as you say, just a minute at a time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I add something that
sure.
I probably should have said in the beginning, because it's a huge, huge issue for me in all of this, and I guess I really would love to address it with you.
Sure.
And this is sort of an embarrassing admission, but I just want to say something about it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the fallouts of all of this for me has been that I really resent that the kids just love him.
Mm-hmm.
And intellectually I understand it, and I know that they need their dad. I know all that, you know. But emotionally I have this really difficult experience with their just pure joy of their dad, and
mm-hmm.
the feeling in me is just hideous. It's this awful feeling, but it's real, and I mean, there are all kinds of, you know, situations where it occurs, and, you know, there are moments where I actually, you know, kind of manipulate situations so that he doesn't even have that much, he won't have the kind of access to them that he wants at a certain time, and it's really cruel on my part. And I just would love to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the hallmark of what you're describing is just a huge trap for you. I mean, it puts you in sort of a vice grip. So what you know is that this person has, you know, absolutely you know, harmed and betrayed the entire family. You also can't share that with your kids, and they wouldn't understand it anyway.
Right. So I wind up,
So it's almost as if, you know, that the feeling is, as if, I'm going to use a very extreme example, as if, you know, you knew that at one point, you know, he had molested one of your children. And yet, you also knew that what was best for them at this point was to really love and trust and find joy in their connection with him. But every single time, you know, the two, the kids were together with him and having a good time, there was a part of you that was just freaking in terms of your fight or flight mechanism, because what's happening inside of you is that you'd be screaming, danger, danger, danger.
Right.
And what you want to do is protect your children, and it feels to you like what you're being asked to do is just, you know, lay them open to, you know, this risk, and also, of course, especially yourself, you know, you're having to wallow in, you know, this betrayal because they can't hold it, and so you're the one who's left holding that piece.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's,
And so, you know, what I get is that for the most part, you're doing what you see is best for your kids, but it's just killing you, and it feels like that is not going to go away because it's the sick salt in the wound every time.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so.
And it's just, you know, it's no win because the feeling is terrible, and the, you know, and I've got to get beyond this one because, you know, whether or not I work out, my husband and I work out together, the kids really need to feel that they have a loving connection with their dad and that I'm not getting in the way of it.
Right, right.
Yeah. So,
so this comes back around to, you know, the healing that we talked about before and that we bracketed, because, yes, it would be great to resume some kind of counseling, you know, between you and your husband, to try to get past the place where you've seen a stop in him and also between you. And so I'm just going to, you know, put that aside now and say, okay, you know, I hope that happens. And there's no way that you could get the information that you want or that you could come to a greater place of healing between the two of you without that. I mean, I'm sure of that. And if you can't do it, you know, in other words, if he just said, you know, he didn't have it in him or he wasn't willing to do it, well, that's the information that you need as well, because that's information that comes from not being able to go forward, you know, and that sometimes is all you need. In any situation, I'm always asking the different partners in each partnership, you know, what are you willing to do here? What is this worth to you? And sometimes people just say, you know, for whatever reason, I can't give, you know, what seems to be the minimum that's required here, and so therefore the other person just has no choice anymore.
Right.
So there's either that or you gain the information through that process. And so as long as that's happening, then, you know, this next piece is what we can come to. And really this one we're going to talk about now is the most important anyway, and that's really about how you meet your rage, how you meet your frustration, and all of these really unpleasant feelings that you know, actually ran away from, as you said earlier on in your life, and that now you've been just like smacked in the face with at the last time that you ever thought, and by the last person that you ever thought possible. So I want to ask you a kind of, I mean, this is going to sound like a, I don't know, an obvious or maybe simplistic question, but what happens? What do you do when this, let's just talk about the rage, for instance, when the rage arises in you?
I respond to it. I you know, I mean, it's, you know, I get angry.
And what happens?
You know, I can feel the physiology of it, you know, sort of just the tension in my chest and all of that, and I get really angry, and I get, you know, definitely that sort of adrenaline piece of it, and then nothing happens, you know, then I just am, I've lost on all fronts, you know, and I'm sort of in this righteously indignant place that gets me nowhere. And
so, but when you say, you know, then nothing happens, something is happening. So what's happening then?
Well, what's happening to me, or what's happening to my husband, or what's happening, you know, I'm not sure I understand.
Well, is it at the point, you said you feel it physiologically, you know,
yeah.
The adrenaline arises, and then what I was wanting to know is, do you lose touch with it? Do you turn it outward? Does it become reactivity? You know, something's happening.
Yeah, I think I get it out in a really vicious, you know, it can be really vicious,
mm-hmm.
Really cutting,
mm-hmm.
And then I think I detach, you know, I kind of live on the outside of myself somehow. I'm not really, I can't really describe it other than I just know I get it out. I don't feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel physically, you know, this tension, but there's not a real release. I can't say I feel like, I got it all out. It never feels like it's all out.
Right.
And I feel sickened by it later, but I don't feel remorse,
mm-hmm.
generally. I just feel like I feel trapped.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it is. I feel
right.
trapped. I want to run. Mm-hmm. I want, you know, want the way I always did in the past of escaping.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, you know, I just feel that feeling of being trapped.
Right, right. So, okay. I want to create a context in which we can go forward with this, and what I mean by that is the best thing that you could do in working with this anger at this point is, number one, to make a decision and to share the decision with your husband that while you're going to continue to work as constructively as you can with your anger, that you're no longer going to direct it at him.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is your anger. And this is your healing that's being called for. And nothing, I mean, he's had enough of it.
Yeah.
And it hasn't changed him, and it hasn't changed the relationship, and it hasn't changed you.
Right.
And you don't want to live with this anger. And what you just noted so clearly is that when you do it the way that you've been doing it, it doesn't release, it doesn't dissipate, it's not a positive solution for you.
No.
Okay. So that's the first thing, is that you could make a decision that this anger from this point forward is your responsibility, and it's your issue, and that you're not going to hand it over to him or to involve him in it, really. You know, unless it becomes absolutely necessary. But if you have to involve him in it, it's not going to be during the anger itself. It's only going to be in the aftermath of your own experience of being with your own anger.
Yeah. Okay. I could try that.
Okay. And I think that you know, if you, I don't know him at all, but I think if you shared that with him, even just the recognition that, you know, you don't want to keep dumping it on him, you don't think that that's helpful to him or to you or to the relationship, and you do want to create a better way for yourself and take responsibility for it, in most cases that's going to be meaningful to the other person. They're going to see
that. He would be thrilled to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's number one. The next thing that you could do is you could decide that for the most part, when you are working on being with and releasing your anger, that you're not going to turn it into language, into words. Because what happens is that once you start bringing a lot of content to the anger, then it quickly becomes blame, or it becomes self-recrimination, or a lot of other things. A lot of thought gets in the way,
mm-hmm.
you know, as it's being conceptualized into words. But the anger itself is a primal experience, and that's what you want to be able to connect with, and that's what's going to help it be able to release. So what I mean, for instance, is that when you are, and we're going to talk more about this in a moment, when you are being with your anger and it has that propulsive quality that it needs to be expressed, let it be expressed with sound. Let it be expressed with movement, you know, growl and stomp, you know, it could be in the car when you're on the freeway with the, you know, the windows all rolled up, or any time that you have a privacy where you're not going to affect anyone else with that kind of sound. But let it move as energy without getting stuck in content. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It sounds like in the moment a hard thing for me to do, but I get it.
Hard thing to do because?
Just because the rage is so verbal. You know, it's you know, here it is. This is kind of it. Like, my desire, you know, I mean, I don't know if this makes sense. My desire for my disappointment to be understood is really intense. I mean, it's the anger, it's the disappointment comes out in anger and outrage, and it, because, and I want the other person, I want him to get that specifically. It's like, you know, I feel like if he doesn't get it, I'm not going to be okay. Like, and the truth is it doesn't matter really in the context of my anger if he does get it, because I'm not okay. But in that moment of that feeling, I want the verbal, I want to know he's hearing my words.
Right.
You know, but like what you said is true. I intellectually get it. He doesn't, it's not making any headway. You know, there's no change occurring.
Yeah, and let me just describe a little bit about, you know, how that is so. It's like this. What if you could wrap up the anger, you know, into a couple sentences, it would be something along the lines of what you're saying is, you know, don't you see how you've wronged me, and don't you see, and can't you see how you have hurt me and how you continue to keep hurting me?
Right? Something like that.
Okay.
Right.
So that's the content of the anger, but hurt is raw and vulnerable. So, you know, hurt is a little infant, like one of, you know, your kids when they were babies, crying because they're just so upset. And when you see that child crying, you want to hold it in your arms and stroke it and bring it to some place of peacefulness. But when you use the anger to, you know, to try to get somebody to acknowledge how much they've hurt you, what's happening is that you're transforming that little newborn infant into, you know, a fierce lion.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't look like, and it doesn't feel like on any level that lion is actually vulnerable and somebody who you could come toward and soothe. The lion looks like it's going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So the other person has no choice but, even on a physiological primal level, to go into a defensive position.
Right. Right.
So if at some point it becomes really important for you to be seen fully in your wound and hurt, and you're ready to do that, and you're also ready to do that in a way that could produce the results you want, it's going to mean that you're actually willing to be really vulnerable with your husband.
Right.
And if you can't do that, then you can't stay with him.
Yeah.
And there's not a right or wrong about that.
Right.
But you would have to be willing, just like he has to be willing to show you vulnerably how wounded he was that led to him making the kind of decision that he did, you have to be willing to be vulnerable enough to show him the actual wound, not, you know, put a gun to his head and say, you better get it.
Right.
So that's just a little bit about, you know, we get that there's righteousness in the anger. It's just counterproductive in terms of what you really want.
Right, I get it.
So what I'm suggesting is you, you know, scream in your car, or you stomp with some, you know, angry music, or you rip phone books, or you do things to get the you know, through you over and over and over again, you know, even if it's 3 minutes every single day, or even, you know, three or four times a day, and you let that take you to a place that is really beneath the anger.
Yeah.
And that if you are going to communicate, you communicate to that place, from that place. But more important is that you let yourself get to that place. And this is the part that has to do with you. That you let yourself get to the place inside that is beneath that anger. You go through the anger and you still stay connected to yourself, to what's there when the storm of the anger passes. And then it's just you in a quieter space.
Yeah. I almost feel myself disconnect as you're saying that. Like I almost check out as you're saying that.
Right. And so that's what I wanted to do now, is that even though this has taken us some time, and it's right that it has, because there's so much to this situation that you're in, for everyone involved, but especially for you, now it's time for us to recognize, okay, yeah, your system is going to disconnect a little bit, because what the hell is he talking about really?
Yeah.
And like, how do we do that?
Okay. Right.
So it's taken us this long, but now we're going to come to the how, and so you're going to, you know, get to actually experience it.
Okay.
So the way that happens is, first of all, I want to just like begin with an experience, is turn your attention, if you would, right now to your body.
Mm-hmm.
And just notice whatever kind of first draws your attention. And I'm going to say a few more things about how I want you to do that, so you can begin while I'm talking, and then I'll be a little bit quiet later. But so your aim is not to look for anything in particular, just to notice what arises.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you notice it, the next intention is to just stay attuned to it, and allow it to be there, however it is, without trying to, you know, fix it, understand it, change it in any way, or make it go away. So your only job in the moment is just to be open and gentle and spacious with your attention as you follow the flow of whatever feeling you're having. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're not looking for anything in particular right now, but we're just getting started. So see if you can do that, and I'll be quiet for a moment, just give you a few little encouragements. So just turn your attention to your body, kind of breathe into your experience right now. Just see what's there, and just for a few quiet moments, notice the most prominent sensation, and just surf that sensation so you're up close and personal, and rather than shifting it, your attempt is to get to be with it so consistently that it's almost like you're surfing it one moment at a time. You're staying connected to it, but also very curious. What's here? What's changing moment by moment by moment? And so I'm going to be completely quiet for the next few moments and just let you do that. What did you notice?
And definitely the two areas are my like chest.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really deep tightness in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And my jaw.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like oh, my jaw just feels like it's probably been clenched way too long.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So good. And how were you able to stay connected to those sensations? Did you find a flood of thoughts coming in and kind of...
I found a flood of thoughts. I kept going away and coming back to it.
Okay. So the going away and the coming back is absolutely fine. Everyone does it. But just let your intention be, we're going to do it again, let your intention be that every time a thought comes, don't try to push it away. And don't, you know, get on the train of that thought. But it's as if you're just saying, as soon as you notice it, thank you for sharing. I'm going back to this other job right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just almost like a bow and then a return to this process. So, and as you do it again, I want your intention to be, you know, can I relax into these places of tension, which is very different from can I try to relax them? You know, I don't want you to try to make them go away. In fact, if they increase, that would even be fine too. But the idea is, can I just sink into them, stay completely awake and curious and attentive, and can my mission be to allow them to be, you know, felt and seen by me in their fullness?
Okay.
So just go back in and do that for a few moments. Watching really closely and allowing those experiences to shift and change or to intensify or to stay even exactly the same if they do. But just keep watching, you know, moment by moment by moment.
You know, can I say something?
Absolutely.
Just by talking about it, okay. I felt like it actually... The feelings that I was feeling started to go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the tension that I felt, it's like almost talking about it kind of dissipates it.
And what's there in its place? What calls you now?
I feel calmer.
Okay, where do you feel the center of that calm?
It feels a little bit more like it's in my chest and a bit in my head.
Okay, so what you noticed was a real change, and that's...
Mm-hmm.
That's an accurate assessment, and it's important. So what I want to ask you to do is keep going and recognize that whatever shifts and changes is where you keep your attention. So if for the next, you know, few moments you just felt the luxury of complete calm, then stay awake and attentive and allowing to that. And if it changes something else, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever arises, keep meeting it halfway and allowing it and connecting to it with your attention.
Mm-hmm.
So just go back in and keep experimenting with that. Just keep noticing. Feel gentle. What's here? Whatever you're finding, just for the next few seconds, let your intention be to go even deeper into your awareness. So like one level beneath, if it's calm or if it's tension or if it's an emotion, go right to the heart of it. Does it move? Is it pulsing? Is it spinning? Is there a color associated with it? Just see what you can see when your intention is to just take it all in. Good. So what did you notice this time?
I liked the metaphor of sort of the surfing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of kept, there's a word that kept coming into my head, like a mantra, I guess. Like, and I kept hearing myself say, it's okay, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And as I would do that, it just, everything felt like it was softening. And then I could also feel when, like a pulsing, like my heart racing or a pulsing. I could definitely feel my heart beating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the rhythm of, was really, I was really aware of that. But I could feel everything loosening too, so
mm-hmm.
kind of a combination.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this feels like it was expanding as an experience. You were opening, becoming more present, but also that there was an enlivening quality to the presence.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that's really great. And so I want to ask you just a funny question before we go on. Can you be with that? Could you allow that kind of loosening and opening and enlivening?
It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of, it's hard for me to attune to that specifically for any length of time. I don't know. My attention span for it is limited,
mm-hmm.
even though it feels better.
Okay, so I get that your attention span for it is limited, and that's important to note. But alongside that, let me ask the question in a different way. Are you okay with feeling that way?
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes people get to a place of better feeling and they realize there's something inside of them that doesn't want it or doesn't allow it. But
yeah.
It sounds like you're saying, well, it's hard for me to cultivate, but if I could cultivate it, yeah, I'd
go for it. Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah.
Okay. All right, so the other thing I want to say is that just through your own intuition, you landed on something that was really important. I often use a term for this kind of attention, and the term is cradling. And, the metaphor comes obviously from cradling a child. But I tell people that you don't need the words usually, but if you had words, the quality of your attention would be spoken such as, it's okay. It's okay. I'm here. I'm with you. It's okay. And you just got there completely on your own, which is really wonderful to see.
That's good.
The short attention span is akin to a muscle that is just completely not worked.
Yeah.
And you can
muscle.
Yeah, you
exactly.
can grow that muscle of your attention really quickly. I mean, in hours, I mean, let alone days. So you could make a decision to start now, and, if we connected a few days down the road, you'd be in a very different place with that. So I want you to know that it's not a lack of capacity. It's just a lack of practice.
Okay.
So then here's the next piece that I want to share with you. What's happening in those simple moments that you just explored with me is that you are bringing your mind through the practice of attention
mm-hmm.
directly into connection with your felt experience as it is moment by moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nurturing connection that, for the most part, you didn't get.
Right. That's true.
And that nurturing attention, first of all, is essential. Second of all, it's exactly what heals. That's the healing process, moment by moment. Our deepest rages and vulnerabilities and any other kind of emotional challenge doesn't want or need anything other from us than our open, spacious, and caring attention. So your history, for good reason, is to run away from this stuff.
Yeah.
And now is your opportunity to make a complete 180 and go into it. When that happens, when we decide it's time to try that, of course the first thing that comes up is, oh my God, it'll destroy me or I'll become overwhelmed or, I won't be able to function. But the reason I was giving you such careful instruction as you were exploring that for a few moments with me is because it's not about disappearing into an experience and being, overwhelmed and then having to check out or go to sleep. It's staying awake and aware and connected as it happens. And when something starts to feel overwhelming, then the mission is just to keep widening our awareness to keep creating more space, even beyond sometimes what feels like our physical body, for the energy to pour through and release, which it knows how to do in every circumstance as long as we create that optimal environment for it to happen.
Mm.
So,
yeah, sounds right.
So going back to what you said, both in your note to me and even in the beginning of this call, you said, I can't believe that I'm finding myself to be such an unforgiving person.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a surprise to me, because I don't think forgiveness is something you can will. I think forgiveness is the natural result of having felt all of the feelings that are engendered in a hurtful or challenging situation. So, you know, my message to you is that if you can take those few moments, you know, that I was guiding you and build on them, you know, on your own, especially when there's nothing going on, so you can get more and more practice, and then start bringing that awareness when you feel tense or when you notice an emotion is surging within you, you're going to start creating that optimal environment. That's your job, is to be an awake and compassionate feeler, surfer of your own experience.
Yeah.
And as you do that, the healing happens. And along the way, you start to notice, I'm not holding that grudge in the same way. I am starting to feel a softening. A forgiveness is arising out of the process that I've been involved in. So in other words, if you take care of your job of allowing these feelings to move through you and connecting to them as they do, the forgiveness will take care of itself. So it hasn't been that you're an unforgiving person. It has been that you're to some degree emotionally disconnected person. And that's not a surprise either, because that emotional disconnection was the most important coping mechanism that could keep you alive through a lot of your challenging life.
Right.
And now that's just not serving you anymore, and you're ready for another way, and you're ready to actually learn the real way of nurturing and healing, which unfortunately you never experienced, because nobody was there who knew how or who was able to give that to you.
Right.
So when we go back to that question about, you know, what have you ever had a real healing from those childhood issues, and what would that look like? We get to the place where now I can tell you through your experience what that is and what that looks like. It looks exactly like those few moments. More and more and more, until that's how you're meeting most of your experience. And suddenly you notice that the storms of life are still there, but most of the time I can be spacious enough to create their peaceful passing within me.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the process, I'm realizing I'm loving myself. This is what it means to love myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, you know, the softening just increases and increases, and you start to feel in many parts of your life that combination that you so aptly described of loosening, opening, and also enlivening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it all it's all what I want, and it all sounds, you know, good. The implementation of it is, you know, a little daunting to me, you know, in the moment, but I definitely think that it's something that I would love to be able to practice.
Well, first of all, I want to take a big weight off your shoulders, and you know, in terms of this daunting practice, which is that you only ever have to do it one moment at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you aren't able to do it, or when you forget about doing it, no big deal.
Yeah.
You just, the next moment that you can, you continue to explore and to work that muscle.
Yeah.
So there, you know, if it seems like you have any pressure on you to do it, then I haven't done my job. If it seems you know, as if it's going to make things harder, then, you know, that's not good either.
No, I don't feel like it'll make things harder at all. I think it gives me possibility of something that's within my control, which is a really wonderful thing. I guess, you know, I've been so used to feeling so out of control in this area that it just sort of feels like that would might create, my being able to control it feels, you know, kind of wild.
So what I would like to do, because I feel that there's so much richness here to explore, and that it does take some time to get used to it, and there are refinements that we haven't gotten a chance to, you know, work with together to help you do this more fully, is I would like to invite you to do another one of these podcast sessions with me in which you can, first of all, report back on, you know, what's happened as you have attempted to bring this process into your life, what's happened as you've attempted to present, you know, the other thing we talked about to your husband, also to talk to him about the anger and taking responsibility for it. But to have our intention be the next time we get together, since we've gotten most of the information out, to focus then more on the process.
Okay.
And even to bring this process directly into some of the more challenging feelings, you know, not just what's happening, you know, in this very moment.
Mm-hmm. I would love the opportunity to do that with you again. I think that even this, you know, this has just been extraordinary just in terms of just your giving this gift to me in this hour. So I would be really grateful to do it again.
Okay, wonderful. So also I want to ask you just to, you know, keep notes about questions that arise as you do this, stuck places, yeah, but. You know, let every thought and doubt.
A lot of those,
yeah. Let them all come up, and don't push them away at all. Just write them down. I don't care if you have a list of 30 buts for me the next time that we talk, because it's going to be really valuable. And this process is about accepting all parts of you, not making some of them okay and other ones not okay.
Okay.
So, you know, in a moment when we stop the recording, I'll talk to you about, you know, how we're going to arrange for that next session. But before we do that, I just want to really honor you and thank you, you know, for doing this. I mean, it's a service, you know, to anybody who might be listening. But beyond that, just the courage to face this in yourself and to say, you know, I haven't been able to break through. I really want to, for everyone's sake, my own especially. And then being able to just take those steps. I mean, it's hard. Like, I know there were a couple times when you said this is embarrassing to say, and there are just a lot of reasons why it's a real challenge to step up and say to someone else, okay, here I am, take me as I am, and what aren't I seeing, what aren't I doing, because I really, really want something, you know, better than I'm experiencing. So I just think that's a great attribute in you, and I just really want to make sure you know that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. So thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.